Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
Kayla Itzinas. I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to Frank Film Club. I'm Maisie Williams and I'm an actor and producer.
I'm Lowry Roberts and I'm a producer and filmmaker.
I'm Hannah Marie Williams and I'm a casting director.
And welcome to our club. Hello everyone and welcome back to Frank Film Club. Thank you so much for joining us, where today we are going to be chatting about the wonderful movie All of Us Strangers, which came out just this year. It was written and directed by Andrew Haig. It's based on a novel called Strangers, which was written by Taichi Yamanda. It is starring Andrew Scott, Claire Foy, Paul Mescal and Jamie Bell. I'll give you a little log line of the story, which I think is just like perfectly encapsulates this. I know that's people's literal job to write a log line that encapsulates a movie, but this one's quite a complex one and it's hard to sort of distill into two sentences, but here we go. One night in his near empty London tower block, screenwriter Adam has a chance encounter with a mysterious neighbour, Harry, puncturing the rhythm of his everyday life. As a relationship develops between them, Adam finds himself drawn back to his childhood home where his parents appear to be living just as they were on the day that they died 30 years ago. I just think that's poetry. Well done. The movie is so moving and, putting Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal on screen together is nothing short of a revelation. In this episode, we're going to be chatting about all the things that we wish that we could have said. How the world has changed from the one that our parents grew up in. Of course, the Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal frenzy. And I definitely want to talk about Claire Foy and her incredible performance in this movie. But before we get into all of that, how are you both? What have you been up to since we last spoke?
Good. I've had a bit of a quieter week, which has been really good because I feel like everything's been very, very chaotic lately, which I've enjoyed. I like the efficiency. Like, there's no time for procrastination because when I'm not with a baby, it's like, no, you have to do your tasks that you need to do. So I've enjoyed that. But actually this week has been really nice because I feel like I've had a bit of space to not be so chaotic.
Oh, that's good.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are you?
Yeah, good as well. I feel like, yeah, things are going well at work. Just been with my dog as per usual. But yeah, actually nothing significant to report, but just that things are happening and I'm feeling good. What about you?
Well, I went to the cinema with my friend Ryan to watch this movie, which was wonderful. He stayed with me for the weekend, and ever since he first watched this film, has been dying for me to see it because I think he watched it at like BFI or something a little while ago. And so it was really, really wonderful to watch this movie with him and discuss everything that I wanted to discuss with you both today. So yeah, it was just a wholesome weekend. Before anything, what I'd love to know is what you knew about this film before you watched it, how you watched it, when you watched it, and just what that first viewing experience was like for you both.
This was not the film that I was expecting it to be. Films that I am really excited about the cast, or I know that there's been like a lot of buzz around them, I actually tend to stay away from reading too much about it because I want to, you know, take in what I can about it. And the elements were there that I thought that I would enjoy it. Funnily enough, from what I had seen, I thought that, in my mind, that Andrew Scott was married to Claire Foy and that they had an affair. Paul Mescal. Maskell's character and Andrew Scott. I don't know why I just made this up in
Where
my mind.
Where did you think that Jamie Bell got into the situation?
I have no idea.
Okay, cool. I love this. Please tell me like what you thought it was going to be.
I don't know why I made that up, but I thought it was going to be that. And I really enjoyed that lie in my brain because that's a film that I kind of want to see.
Yeah, could
well.
Make that. Sounds yeah. great.
Great. And then when I went to see it, with my friend Beth, who we both love, Paul Mescal and Andrew Scott. And we had a little wine before, a couple of wines, and then we went and saw it. And it was just not the film that I expected. And there was so much buzz around this film at LFF. I feel like a lot of people were like, this film's really stuck with me out of everything that I've seen. I saw that online quite a few times from people whose tastes I really respect and appreciate. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, maybe something really dramatic happens and like that has stuck with them. But it's not. Like, it's really stuck with me. I have never been so excited to discuss a film with you because it's understanding what it all means to you and like them. And that's why it sticks with you. So needless to say, it's one of the most memorable films I think I've seen of recent times.
Oh, I'm pleased.
And I'm really interested to know what you thought.
Yeah. Well, I was really similar in that I'd heard so much about it during LFF.
Yeah.
And had just heard about that everyone was loving it and that everyone was completely heartbroken by it as well. And like that they just like had cried the whole way through. And so I knew that it was going to be like emotional. And I knew that I think I knew that it was going to be quite quiet as well. And so was really excited to watch it. Was a little bit nervous that like, oh God, what if I don't love it? Because everyone is telling me that this is like the best film. But I did love it and it was great. And I thought it was brilliant. I was so pleased to actually watch it and enjoy it because everyone has been loving it.
Yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I knew absolutely nothing about this film, hadn't watched the trailer, hadn't been to LFF, so didn't really hear a lot of the buzz around it. Knew that it was obviously like quite a buzzy movie just because of the success of Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal in recent years and like their careers and like having them together. I had an inkling that there would be some kind of relationship between the two of them. But really just thought they would like, I don't know, meet at a party or something. And then like, it would be sort of a tragic love story about like coming to terms with one's sexuality. Like, I really just thought it was going to be that sort of story. Yeah. And I said that to Ryan before we went in. He was like, so what do you think it's going to be about? And I told him, and then he was just like laughing and he was like, okay, well, buckle up, let's go kind of thing. And just was completely, moved by the film and was just really kept on my toes. I was really like on edge for a lot of it because I just was like discovering this story for the first time and like trying to work out, you know, the like, I don't know, just the rules of like the story and like who's alive, who's not, and you know, just that kind of like element to it. So I just felt really taken aback, like really like surprised, and yeah, kind of left feeling this like painful open wound in my chest, which yeah, it's a beautiful film.
I don't think I've left the cinema wanting to look into everyone's theories, and I refrained because we're obviously doing it on the podcast and I wanted to find out through this conversation, but I haven't felt that way about a film in so long, which is interesting because usually I get that feeling when it's based on a real person or like existing IP, like how much it
relates.
Yeah. But it's such an original concept and could go so wrong also, but everything is pulled together, like executed excellently. So,
yeah. So I think like one of the most surprising parts, of the movie was like the themes that it tackled, like to me when I was watching it, like I didn't expect it to. I kind of want to run through some of those. So grief, you know, quite obviously loneliness as well, and then there's the element of the movie which is kind of about homophobia and the AIDS crisis of the 80s, and then there's also the themes of getting to know and understand your parents and maybe not super loving that process. And then also it's a ghost story. Like it's, you know, sorry. Yeah, sorry, spoiler. But it is, it's a ghost story. I mean, it kind of says that in the synopsis. I guess they weren't trying to keep that a secret, but I had managed to avoid that spoiler. And I'm kind of glad that I did, because it was like, you know, I think when Andrew Scott is in the park near his home and Jamie Bell comes up behind him, I really thought that it was some sort of like, you know, secret meeting.
Encounter.
Yeah. I thought it was that. And the way that he followed him was... I don't know. And now it's like quite obvious that it's his father and his son, you know, but I just think the sort of, yeah. And he goes to the shop and buys his booze. I don't know. Anyway, I would love to know which of those themes really stood out to you, or if there are any others that you really feel like you took from this movie.
I feel like I'm going to unravel a lot of things.
Go for it.
From like the watching experience, even you reading the log line, didn't occur to me that he met that guy and then he went and found his parents. And is there a reason for that? I don't think it makes logical sense, right? I don't know if it's meant to make logical sense, like what happens to him.
How do you mean?
It's not like there's no reality to this, or is there a reality to this?
I mean, that's a reality. Yeah, I guess that's up for, since you're asking that question, that's like, I'm sure up to the audience to decide. I would have said the same as you, Lowry, that I think that there is a reality to him actually going out of London, or like actually sort of going to these clubs in London.
On his own, do you think?
Yeah. Well, or would you imagine that he's sort of like laying in bed just in his
mind? And it's all in his mind.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely in his mind.
I don't have an answer to that question. Yeah. I'm just so interested what other people have taken from it, because I think I'm still understanding it. But like, to answer your question, I think for me, like, reconciliation with your parents is really interesting. And that is a thing that gut punched me. But just... loneliness and feeling self-destructive in that loneliness as well. Not Andrew Scott's character. What's their character's name?
Adam and Harry.
Harry is Paul Muscle's character.
Exactly.
Harry's, you know, self-destructive nature of his loneliness is something that that really, really moved me as well.
So I guess like there's a lot of kind of twists and like reveals, but the first one, I don't know if you noticed, Hannah, but when he gets on the train down to his parents for the first time, it's the train that I get on. So
is it now?
Yeah. So I thought every time I'm on that train now, I'm going to look out for Andrew Scott going to visit his dead parents.
Fuck. Are you Claire Foy?
Yeah, maybe it's me. Maybe he's coming to my house.
You're waiting at home for Andrew to knock on your door.
Yeah, I'm in. So there's that sort of reveal. When did you twig that his parent, like, because he goes back in time, it's the 80s, but I don't feel like we'd spent enough time in his flat in London. I mean, from the outside, the apartment block does look very, very modern, which I think is helpful for the storytelling. But I was then kind of very confused at what the time, like when he went into the house and they're calling him mum and he's calling them mum and dad, and like how did that kind of affect you, and did you know what was going on? Because I was just looking around at Ryan like, what is going on here? Like, they're all the same age. I'm so confused.
I did know what was going on, but I did know that was the plot. Before going in.
Okay.
I don't know why. Maybe I'd seen the trailer, or maybe the log line. Yeah. I did know what was going on straight away. But I loved that it didn't feel jarring and forced and weird. It just like flowed with the world that we were in. Even though we were suddenly in a different, we weren't in the world that we know because we were like jumping times. But I loved that it did flow in that way. But yeah, I knew what was happening.
Yeah, I think I remember thinking, oh, that's funny that he calls his friends mum and dad.
That's fucking weird.
But I don't remember the moment when I twigged, so I don't feel, it wasn't like a bit like, oh my God, there is mum and dad, and that's the way that it's been handled. I was so with the filmmaking that I was like, okay,
I was just yeah, with it.
Like, I'm going to go with it. And yeah, like, oh, actually, no, I think I know what's going on.
Because usually, I feel like in a cinema, I would be like, cause, especially because I was with my mate Beth and we had had a couple of wines, but like, what are they talking about? Mm. That's bad casting, isn't it? My friend cast this film, actually. But no, I can't remember when I was like, oh my God, what's going on? I just felt really taken away with, mm-hmm, with the way that it was told.
Really engrossed. Mm. And so the introduction of Paul Mescal's character, I mean, we're going back in time slightly here. That whole section made me feel like really uneasy. But I mean, I knew very little about what this film was going to be about, but I just, there was something about his energy that felt very needy, very desperate. Obviously, you know, we sort of go on to understand that they're both painfully lonely. But what did you think of seeing Paul Mescal in a character like this? And yeah, just kind of his role throughout the story.
Oh, I just, when he came on screen, was just doing his thing, I was like, oh my God, every time I see him, I'm just like taken aback by how amazing I think he is. Yeah. Like, I think he's like an incredible actor. And because he's just, I just think he's so real, but not in a way that it takes you out of a film and like makes you think you're just watching someone who can't act. Like, he's just incredible. So I love that. I didn't feel the creepiness at all, but maybe that's again because I knew that it's going to be a love story between them. Mm. So maybe I already knew that it was okay. Mm. But yeah, I just kind of like melted a bit. Mm. But for both of them, actually, they're both incredible in that scene where they meet, because it's so like awkward and you're like, oh my God, I don't know. It's like fair enough that he's uncomfortable, but also you're coming on strong. And then he just closes the door and you're like, oh.
Does he just, does he say something before he closes the door?
I think what happens is he says something and then afterwards you're just looking at the door closed, and then when you come back into the apartment, Andrew Scott's alone. So
okay, mm-hmm, okay. I am so desperate to rewatch this film, and I think I'm probably going to be even more after talking about this, but I wish I had paid more attention to that performance at the beginning. Not that I didn't, because that's the moment that he comes on the screen and I feel the same way about him. He's so magnetic. I was thinking about his accent. I was trying to work that out. And then because of that, I was maybe not looking so much at the nuance of like what he was actually doing. And then obviously towards the end, then how that comes back around. So I am excited to rewatch that performance again. But I was wondering about the accent, because I was so excited to see them both be Irish and great together.
So something I want to bring up with you both. Their relationship starts to really blossom. And I think it's just something that Ryan said, who's gay and in a gay relationship. He just really loved the way that the sex scenes were handled, and also just like the portrayal of like their relationship, which I think is worth noting, just because I don't know a lot of times where like gay relationships are portrayed on screen where like my gay friends are like into it. They're usually like, this feels like a straight person telling this story or like whatever. So I think that's fabulous. But yeah, they're relationship starts to blossom, and we see them in the club together, and then things start to like really like descend a little bit into like the mayhem. And I was really like worried. The editing and the score and all the imagery, like as you start to see that Paul Mescal's character's there and then he's also not there, I was starting to get really spooked out. But something I immediately thought at that moment was that Paul's character, Harry, was some way involved in his parents' car accident. Like he was the other car or something. I just knew he was dead. And I thought that he must have been linked like that way somehow. I don't know.
What?
I don't know if you guys had any like critical thoughts at that point, but
I don't know.
No, I didn't. No.
Okay. That was just something that I was like really barking up the wrong tree, but I knew then that he was dead. Something which I know you didn't pick up on the first watch, and Ryan also didn't pick up on the first watch. I wonder if you did. The night that Harry dies is that first night, because he's dead in his bed with that bottle of whiskey that he took down to Adam's apartment. Did you notice that that was the same time?
That I did notice. But I couldn't figure out what we were looking at when he goes into the room.
Yeah.
Because it was like out of focus, and I think it was the pillow. And then it went in focus as he went up to it. Mm. And it was red.
His hand.
Was it his and hand?
He's got his hand.
Yeah.
Like that. And then, it's his pink jumper.
For some reason, it was like an optical illusion to me. I could not figure out for the life of me what we were looking at. Mm. If I was at home, I would have paused it.
It was, it was a really ambiguous shot where I had no idea what we were going to see. And because it had been quite spooky at points, I thought, are we going to see something horrific right now? Like, I really thought we could have gone there.
I never thought that. And it's interesting that you said you found it a bit more spooky. Or even, did you even say scary?
Than
what you'd expected. And I didn't feel spooky at all. So when he opened the door and then when he went in, I didn't feel worried that they might show us something awful.
You felt in?
I felt like quite safe.
Mm.
I felt like heartbroken because I was like, obviously knew what we were about to see, as in knew what had happened, but I wasn't like worried that they were going to show something awful.
Yeah.
But yeah. But I'd also realised that when I watched the ending the first time, I'd missed a line, which was like, did no one find me or something like that?
Yeah, where are my parents?
Where are my parents? Yeah, and I'd missed that because Ron had come downstairs and started talking to me. so then I rewatched it and was like, oh, okay. But
yeah. I'm in there, aren't I? That's what he says.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A real standout performance from the year, I think, is Andrew Scott in this movie. And I mean, we could talk for hours on this podcast about all the movies that have been snubbed from Oscar nominations this year. But I just would love to speak about any like real highlights that you found or scenes that you thought, Andrew really shone in. I mean, the whole film, of course.
The whole thing. But there's so much humanity to like anything that I've seen him in, whether even like in Sherlock, which is just not my bag at all. But I saw some of his performance in that, and he just doesn't make anything feel silly. And the way that he handles the boyishness of the character when he's around his parents, because he is still being an adult speaking to his parents, but there's boyish things that he, you know, falls into from being around them. And I just thought that is so subtle and lovely and just handled really well. But also on the other side of it with Harry, the self-conscious nature of the sex scenes was some of the most authentic that I've seen, I think. Mm-hmm. It feels like very universal, but like you were saying about your friend Ryan, also just so great to hear that that is what that feels like to be depicted on screen also. Mm-hmm.
Mm. I think for me, the my standout bit was at the end when he's talking to Harry and he's like, you're here with me. And it was like that line, and he's like trying to be so strong for Harry. And it's obviously also like inside, like distraught. He's just found like, I don't know, the love of his life, maybe, dead. And he's been strong for him. And I was just like, and it just like broke my heart. And I thought that Andrew Scott just was incredible in that moment and throughout. But that moment in particular, I was just like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When you see his character back with his parents and sort of speaking to them and talking about the way the world is now. And he comes out to his mom, to Claire Foy. And then he also, well, it's sort of noted that the mom tells the dad. And then he has that next scene with Jamie Bell. One part that I just think is like the best performance I've ever seen of someone crying is when he's speaking to his dad and about like the time when he was crying in his room, and his dad says, well, I didn't really like to think of you as someone who was getting picked on. I think that, you know, if I was at school with you, I probably would have been one of the sort of people that would have picked on you. And then, yeah, Andrew Scott says, like, you know, I think I kind of knew that, which is, you know, why it's so painful. And then he starts to apologize, and it's when Andrew Scott like breaks down in that moment. It's just like so real. Like, you know, when you're just watching someone and you can't believe that they're acting, like they're pretending, because it's just like what you're seeing is like, it's not fiction. It's just like so real. Truly, yeah, a masterclass. But in that, him sort of coming out to his parents and speaking about, you know, his life and loneliness and how he's sort of shaping his world now without them. Like, what do you think of that as like, you know, a scene that you don't see that like in many things? And it's like something that I guess like when you're dealing with grief, you know, you kind of imagine all of those conversations that you could have had or whatever. But yeah, how do you think that, what did you take from that moment? When him and his mum are sitting at the kitchen table and she's sort of asking him about how he's doing, and he comes out and then she's sort of like badgering him slightly and he sort of gets really angry and defensive and her, you know, just that whole scene, it's just like, it's, you know, something that can only appear in like a fictional film. But yeah, it's so amazing to watch.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was amazing to watch. And I think Claire Foy is, well, they were both incredible in it, but Claire Foy in it was like, she comes off so warm at first and she's like so excited, have you got a girlfriend, blah, blah, blah. And then it kind of, the conversation goes on and then, and you know where it's, because we know where it's going and she doesn't. And then you see that change in her and you're like, oh, and she's actually like, not very nice about it at all, and it's heartbreaking, and you're like, oh my god, is this, are they like not gonna talk anymore, is this like it, have they just and I don't know, I feel like I haven't really seen that very much. Usually it's the dad figure who kind of takes that role, so I liked that take on it, and then with the dad actually being like more accepting straight away.
We were speaking about this when we spoke about Priscilla, that was a different time and things were accepted in different ways back then. And if you think about it, like, our parents are learning to accept the new way of living. And yet we don't want to accept a lot of the time prejudice that they used to think before. But at the time they thought, they believed what they believed because everyone believed it, and
yeah,
no, like it wasn't like she was wrong, and it was everybody was like that.
Yeah.
And it's not right at all. But there's something about trying to understand your parents' shortcomings in that way that feels really
just like healing.
Yeah.
Like, I think it works both ways, you know, the understanding and the patience has to come like from both sides, and yeah, it's not always, you know, a view that we like to have.
I just wonder, you know, when Daisy's older, if there'll be things, there will be things, because there always is, like there always is different
times will change,
things that will change, and we've been doing things a wrong way, and I wonder what those things are going to be with Daisy and if she'll be forgiven of that, or if that'll be a part of our lives that we have to pretend never happened because we're now changed people.
Yeah. Or if there's things that change that we need to change in ourselves, or like society has changed and we need to change the way that we do certain things. Like, how will we adapt to that?
Yeah.
Because I right now I'm like, I'll adapt to anything because I'm great. But like, actually, when we're older, maybe we'll be like, but no, that's not the way.
Yeah.
And it's like, I bet it is really hard to change.
So another theory. So when Andrew Scott's character, Adam, is in London in his apartment, he's writing a screenplay. He's a screenwriter. Do you think all of this is just like something he's writing?
Well, I got very excited by the fact that he was a screenwriter because I love films about filmmakers. I just do. And I got really excited by that. And I did think, I thought that the parents thing might be him pulling on his experiences in order to be able to write something. The parents was not the real, like, that was a reality that wasn't actually there. But Paul Mescal's character, Harry, was a reality. So I thought that he was living in this reality and he was coming to terms with his, with the help of his new lover.
Mm-hmm.
And he was putting that into his writing. That's what I thought the film was. And then obviously at the end, you realise that's not what it is.
Yeah.
He's even more lonely than you thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. But is he lonely? Is that is loneliness not just a feeling that you have on the inside? And so even though on the outside you might look lonely, if you don't feel lonely, are you lonely?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny because I, unlike you, I really don't like films about filmmakers and about like filmmaking because I just think, do that every day. Let's look at something else.
Yeah.
But so in this, when he said he was like, I'm a screenwriter, I was like, oh. But then I really quickly got over that because it wasn't like, oh, we're going to see how the film might come out. And it wasn't that at all. He was just a writer and we knew he was creative. And that was, yeah. And then it just kind of went on from there. But I thought exactly the same as you.
Is there an answer? Is there an answer?
I'm sure there is in the book. But that's what I think is like really beautiful about this is that like, you know, when you're adapting something, it is going to change. And I think leaning into those things is like sometimes really beautiful. And the things that you can explain in a book through someone's eyes is like very different to like how you can explain the way they're thinking like on screen. Because like unless you do a voiceover, it's like there's so many ploys that people use that are kind of like just done time and time again. So, I mean, I haven't read the book, so I don't know if there are, but I wonder if lots of these questions maybe aren't as unclear in the book, and like that's why it also now makes an incredible film. Like, I just think that's, to think that in my mind. I think probably no, but is there anything that you didn't like?
Yeah.
Okay.
Really? There is actually. I mean, it obviously didn't ruin the film for me. And even, this is me really being picky.
It's your taste.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of people love it, but I don't know if I love the soundtrack, you know.
I'm so glad you said this because this is what I was going to bring up.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I thought it was way too literal. Like there was a part, so the power of love, it was too literal for how unliteral the film was. I felt like there was so much up for interpretation that then the songs being in there that were so literal, like when he goes up the escalator with his parents and it's like, I don't know what song it is, but the lyrics when he's going up the escalator is like I'm so young or something like that. Like it's very literal. Yeah. And I picked up on it at least three song choices and I didn't love that, but it's not it didn't ruin it. It just wasn't for me.
I wonder if I like didn't really pick up on that, and I was like quite happy with I was quite all right with the soundtrack. But I wonder if that was intentional to try like explain a little bit for some audience members. I don't know.
Maybe, like, do you think they were? I feel like if you're gonna go see a film like this, like the songs aren't gonna help you that much.
That's true.
Yeah. Like this is love. This is like we're good. Like
yeah.
But
That's true. I hadn't picked up on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not just the song choices, but also like this, the score. I feel like there was very few moments of silence. And the only time that there was moments of silence was, I think, when Harry was saying, like, can you hear that? Like, it's so quiet.
And then they were like, oh, shit,
you're about to turn the music. Oh my God, yeah, so literal. Let's turn the... Yeah. But like just very, very overscored in a way that like is not really of... the style right now in filmmaking and in like these sort of quiet love stories. It like, it feels like something of a different day. But yeah, like I guess must be intentional, but yeah, was not my favorite element, because we always love talking about the soundtrack. And I think we always say that we love the soundtrack. And if we always say we love the soundtrack, then it sounds like bullshit. But if I say now, didn't super love the soundtrack, then you know that there are films that I don't feel like that about.
And that's really picking it apart, you know, because if that soundtrack was in any other film, there's no way that I'd be sat here going, the soundtrack wasn't amazing, it wasn't my favourite. But like when every other part of it has really left me with a lot of emotions and questions within myself and about film structure in general, then I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah. I wonder if it hadn't been so heavy on soundtrack, like if it did have more moments of silence or quiet, like because it's such a quiet film anyway, I'd say even with a soundtrack, like would it have just slowed it down too much? Like I wonder what it would have been like with not much music at all.
Yeah, like you're right. Did it carry us through in a way that we weren't even conscious of?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe I would have like.
I want to watch again.
Yeah.
God, there's so much that I want to, like, I need to make notes after this conversation and then go, right,
did
check.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love that, though, where you can rediscover things in a film. Yeah. It's, yeah. Like, it's good storytelling. So it's been really hard to find out how much they spent on this movie, but apparently it was quite modest. And it's done pretty well so far at the box office in the opening weekend. I think it's taken $5 million. So... yeah, I mean, should we do some guesses anyway?
Yeah. Well,
like, how much do you think it looks like they spent?
Well, it's only four characters.
And locations as contained. Well is very sparse.
Yeah. Yeah.
8 million?
Yeah, like £8 or £9.
£8 or £9.
£8 million.
Yeah. That's like I was going to go around there.
Yeah.
I'd guess so that. 5 million the first weekend, on track to do well. Okay, let's get into some Letterboxd reviews, which always make me giggle. I mean, not necessarily on this film because, this is like a really, so, you know, not really the view that we have. This is just a 3-star review from Seth's Reviews. And he says, look, it may be a touch heavy-handed at times, as well as overpowering in regard to its themes. But it nevertheless partially succeeds as an intimate personal story about loss and love. And I'd be lying if I said it didn't make me feel something. It invokes the exact feelings that it should do, but I still feel as if I expected a little more, which is somewhat irrational because I did like it, just not as much as I had hoped.
The fact that they've said it was heavy-handed, I think is mad, because the part where Andrew Scott comes into his mum and dad's room in his little boy's pyjamas. Like, I don't, like, that somehow worked and it flowed and the audience isn't laughing at the fact that he's in these little ridiculous kids' pyjamas. And I think the fact that that worked and wasn't distracting and hilarious shows that it wasn't heavy-handed. It was just, like,
it was
really smooth.
Very gentle.
Yeah.
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 And by that point, because that's towards the end, you're already... on the ride. I mean, it's testament to all of the elements, but I think that review in and of itself encapsulates sort of like the feeling that you get and the questions that you have after going to watch something. Isn't that much more interesting than going to watch something that then ties everything up for you and you've watched just this moment in a story in someone else's life that you feel satisfied that you've gone to see?
Yeah, it's like really intellectualizing something that can actually just be like an emotion and it's just allowed to like live in your body and like feel good without you having to like dig in and be like, yes, but this, I don't like that I liked it because there's this that doesn't make sense or this that I don't agree with. I think that's like kind of the beauty of like your taste. Like it kind of just goes where it goes, doesn't it? But I really appreciate like the very honest like review, yeah. I think. I think most times on most of the time on Letterboxd, people are just like really trying to get a laugh, which is like great. Because it's very entertaining, but it's nice when you read something kind of earnest.
Yeah, for sure.
Clementine gave this 4 stars and says, that was so sensitive and beautiful, even though the accents were beating my ass.
Who's that? Just the one?
I guess so, okay, yeah. Right. I mean, a little bit Andrew Scott, because his Irish accent comes out. I mean, but wait, you said, yeah.
Where's he from?
He's Andrew Scott. Irish.
Oh, how can he be doing a bad accent then?
Well, no, I guess actually I've just realised he has spent time in Dublin, but it's like he's doing English accent sometimes and then... Like,
yeah.
Oh.
I think he'd like softened his
accent. You look like a little rabbit then. You were like...
Wait, did I watch the right film?
And then Julia gave this 4 stars and says, more like all of us criers.
Oh, good one, Julia.
Which is really funny.
That's great. That's what our episodes should be called.
All of us criers.
All of us criers. A thumbnail of us weeping.
Yeah, we're going to steal that from you, Julia. Thank you. Okay, so the actors, Paul Mescal is going to be in Gladiator 2, which is directed by Ridley Scott and is also starring Pedro Pascal and Connie Nielsen.
Could I be more excited? I don't know.
That one's going to be a good watch.
Yeah.
And then Andrew Scott, if you didn't see him in Vanya at the National Theatre last... Oh, not last year. If you didn't see him in Vanya last year, it's coming to National Theatre Live and it's going to be in cinemas from February 22nd. And I've not seen it, but I've heard the most amazing things. And so I'm desperate to watch that, and you all should too. And then he's also in a TV show, a limited TV show, which is called Ripley, and he's playing Tom Ripley. And it's also going to be starring Dakota Fanning and Johnny Flynn. And it's coming out on April 4th on Netflix.
I didn't know Johnny Flynn was in there. Mm. These are some of my favourite actors that we're talking about here. Like this little ring of actors that are like working with each other. Pedro Pascal, Paul Mescal. Oh, hello.
I know, they need to do a little Mescal-Pascal combo.
Yeah. Can you imagine if we called him Pedro Pascal? And Paul Mescal.
Wait, now I'm confused. What is his name?
Paul's name is Mescal. Oh, even though I've said Mescal a few times today. And then Pedro Pascal is Pascal. But if we called him Pascal, that's kind of Pascal. Pascal. And then I actually cannot find a single thing on what Andrew Haig is doing next. Maybe
having a break.
There's
a lot of emotions to have to get out.
It is. Yeah. And I think his movies are like few and far between, but always like incredible and
well
so
developed. He's well out developed. Living life and feeling emotions so he can put them into films. He's not just going film after film.
Exactly.
Gotta live a little.
Yeah. He's a real one. He's amazing. Okay. So what are your final thoughts?
Oh, just excellent. We'll watch again. We'll discuss even more. Mm. And just like, what a beautiful film. Like, so pleased. So pleased.
Chuffed. Chuffed. Rewatch times 1,000, honestly. Mm-hmm. I really am very excited. Yeah. Probably more than we've ever discussed a film to rewatch again.
Love that. But going to rewatch with the soundtrack in mind.
Yes. Oh no, because now I might get annoyed.
Oh yeah, sorry, you just ruined it. I won't do that.
I loved and great chat.
I'm really glad that you both enjoyed it, and it was such a pleasure to speak with you both and just hear more about your thoughts and your experience watching the movie. Thank you everyone so much for listening to this episode. If you want to get in touch with us, then we are on TikTok and Instagram at Frank Film Club. You can also email us and let us know what you thought about this movie and any of the other ones that we've watched, which is filmclub@wrapped.world. And we are also on YouTube, so you should like and subscribe. And also on Spotify, give us a follow so you get notifications every time that we upload, which is once a week when we're online. Thank you so much for watching, and we'll be back next week.
Yeah.
thank you so much for watching / listening, and we'll be back next week with a fabulous episode on Mean Girls, the original, with a little nod to the new one, which came out this year. So go and watch them both and meet us back here next week for more Frank Film Club.
This podcast was presented by Wrapped.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.